We know enough about our climate problem to know that it's serious and that we need to get started right away.
What we're seeing right now is a clear loading of the weather dice.
Massive fires burning out of control across Southern California.
The brush burning index, that's a number that we rate the threat of a brush fire. For tomorrow is 296. This is the highest number I've ever seen in my career.
Los Angeles Fire Chief Ralph Terrazas describing the unprecedented extreme fire weather conditions near Los Angeles on CBS News. I'm NPR Chief Meteorologist Paul Huttner, and this is ClimateCast. Firestorm. That's the word used to describe the uncontrollable wind-whipped fires in California this week. And while your local newscast will report on the flames, they'll probably miss the one reason these fires are so severe, our increasingly extreme climate. I asked University of Alberta fire expert Mike Flanagan about the clear climate change link to this seemingly new breed of devastating superfires.
The warmer we get, the more fire we have. We'll have drier fuels, and that means it's easier for fires to start and spread. Another thing about drier fuels, it means that more fuel is available for consumption, which means higher intensity fires, which means those fires are difficult or impossible to put out. I mean, fire is driven by the extremes. The tail wags the dog.
From fire to ice, or maybe the lack thereof, one of the strongest climate change signals is happening in winter. In fact, winter is the fastest warming season in America. A new analysis of 700 weather stations across the U.S. shows winter is getting shorter and warmer in a hurry. That's why I asked NOAA meteorologist Ken Kunkel when the trend of America's shrinking winters began to show up in the data.
I would say there's a fairly clear date or time in around 1980. Prior to that, growing seasons had been pretty well constant for about the previous 50 years. But around 1980, they started increasing in length, and really kind of the same time warming of the globe accelerated.
So how much later is that average first freeze in fall?
For the U.S. as a whole, it's about a week later in the fall. And then if we look at the first or the last freeze in the spring, it's also about a week earlier. And so the whole season, growing season, has expanded by about 2 weeks. And the kind of dormant season, if you want to call it that, the winter dormant season has contracted by about 2 weeks.
And I've noticed in the data and many of the studies that I've looked at that winter is the fastest warming season in the United States. Why is winter warming faster than other seasons?
Well, I would probably point to a couple of reasons. One, the prime effect of increasing greenhouse gases in the atmosphere is to increase the amount of infrared radiation that is emitted by the atmosphere towards the Earth. And that particular effect probably has a bigger impact on temperature in the wintertime when the days are short, nights are long. And we see that particularly in the Arctic regions where there's no sunlight in the wintertime, and the greatest warming is occurring in the Arctic.
So, Ken, as you look at these current trend lines and take them out into the future, how much warmer can winters get? I saw a Climate Central study that projected the potential for Duluth, Minnesota winters to be like Amarillo, Texas by 2100. Is a scenario like that realistic?
That would be pretty much, I think, on the far end of what's possible. That's probably quite unlikely. But if you take a look at the data across the U.S., the length of the growing season anyway, if we look at that particular metric, if we go up to, say, Minnesota, that increasing by another 4 weeks is not out of the question.
Ken Kunkel with NOAA, thanks for sharing your insight on ClimateCast today.
Sure.
My name is John Latimer, and I live on Crooked Lake, which is southeast of Grand Rapids, Minnesota, about 8 miles. I'm aware of when the ice goes on the lake because I check it every day or so. And once the ice goes on, I make some, you know, educated guesses. If the weather is sub 20, I know that within 24 hours, I'm probably going to have 2 inches of ice, and I can probably go out and experiment with it. I stay close to shore at first and then kind of expand from there. I'm a skater or an ice boater, and so I'm always looking for that ice that forms and gets smooth and hard, and then snow abates and you can get out on it, enjoy yourself on it. The ice itself seems to be nice and clear and hard this year, especially. Some years the ice is a little milkier, but I don't think that there's any degradation physically. What normally happens up here is I'll get 2 or 3 inches of ice and I'll think, oh boy, this skating is going to be great. And the next day or 2 days later, I'll get snow and the snow will push the ice down, bringing water up through the cracks. And you end up with slush on top of the lakes. And that makes, well, snowmobiling very difficult out there on lakes that have a relatively safe piece of ice down there, but there's this layer of water and snow on top of it that make getting around pretty difficult. The duration is decreasing. The most startling thing in the 34 years that I've been keeping track of ice in dates is that it has averaged a half a day a year later every year since 1984. Now, this year it was early, but it's certainly not early enough to push the average much off of its continued slope towards later ice in. And ice out dates, again, the average is tending towards earlier ice out, so a shorter period of time with ice on the lake.
Yeah, I'm with you, John, and a lot of Minnesotans who like our ice in winter to get out on it. Really cool stuff from Grand Rapids. Okay, so as winter shrinks in Minnesota, how does less ice and snow affect our winter tourism industry? Explorer Minnesota Tourism Director John Edmond follows the impact on Minnesota's winter tourist dollar.
Winter tourism is extremely important to a state like Minnesota. If you look at our $14 billion industry, about 24% of the expenditures come during the winter months. And so as a result, many destinations, many attractions and lodging establishments are working at sort of weather-resistant tourism activities, things that aren't as dependent on weather. Of course, there's certainly going to be that impact. A destination that's really built on snowmobiling or skiing, as an example, may be more affected than another city or another destination, but they are trying to adjust the skiing, the downhill skiing establishments, putting more into snowmaking equipment. There are many resorts that I know that perhaps aren't buying as many snowmobiles as they used to because there just isn't the return on investment on that when you have the unpredictability of weather. But yet there are still parts of our state, you know, way up in the Northeast, that usually do have pretty good snow conditions, and maybe they're marketing themselves different in the sense that we have winter conditions in our part of the state, but it's just not something that's found as common in every part of Minnesota as it has, I think, in years past.
Gauging the economic impact of our warmer Minnesota winters. That's ClimateCast this week. Thanks to KAXE in Grand Rapids, Minnesota, for the production assist. I'm NPR Chief Meteorologist Paul Huttner.